Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, with you as always, and with me as always, Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Hello.
And Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Danny. Today, we will be talking about two films. That's kind of a misstatement. Danny will be talking about one film. And then joining Nick and I as we talk about a second film. There won't be a discussion topic today. There really wasn't much happening in the movie universe to discuss. The Wolf of Wall Street might get pushed back either later this year or early next year. People are saying Bryce Dallas Howard might be in the new Jurassic World movie. But you know, what do you want me to say? What do you want me to say beyond that? What can we say beyond that? Not much of anything. So Danny's going to talk about Rush. We're going to talk about Enough Said, the movie that is posthumously starring James Gandolfini and, well, Julie Louis-Dreyfus is still alive, so not technically posthumously starring her, but she's
there
too.
Still alive.
No, she's still alive. She just won for Veep.
No, like, but what if she just died?
Oh, God. Yeah, wow. Depending on when you listen to this, I mean, she might not be alive anymore. Like, if this is, like, 30 years in the future, like, I don't want to be making statements that won't be correct 30 years from now. Yeah. Anyway, now that we've got that weird tangent over with. So that's it for today. Then afterwards, of course, we'll be giving you our choices for Blu-rays and DVDs coming out in the week ahead. And a personal selection of our own. So that's it. That's all. We can move on. So, Danny, why don't you tell us what you thought of the new Ron Howard film, Rush?
Well, that's a tall order.
Is it?
Well, let's put it this way. Out of all the films that I could talk about solo, this is one that I think is very mediocre, and I saw it about 5 weeks ago. So it's not the ideal choice. You know, I don't have that many strong feelings about it. But yeah, I do think it's another kind of middle-of-the-road Ron Howard film. I think I actually don't want to put too much like blame on Ron Howard because I'm sort of becoming less and less impressed with Peter Morgan's writing. And he, of course, wrote Frost Nixon for Ron Howard, and he wrote Rush again. And he's sort of like carved this niche for himself, like writing these two-hander true story films to like put them in a category like The Queen, Frost Nixon, Damned United, Rush. And so it all just feels very formulaic and by the book. There's a scene that sort of sums up how kind of predictable the writing is like we're learning about Daniel Brühl's character, Niki Lauda.
Niki Lauda.
Yeah. And so the film wants to show us that he's sort of like an independent minded, like driven guy.
Driven.
And, yeah. Sorry.
He's not being so, driven. He's the driver, Dan.
He's the driver. He's very driver minded. And so there's a flashback to a scene with his father and father's like, come join the family business. Like, it'll be good for you. You don't need these cars. And then Daniel Brühl just stands up and he's like, you know what? Screw you. I don't need you and your money. I will race myself and for myself. And then he runs out and then it like cuts back to present day Niki Lauda. And it's just like, okay, yeah, like he doesn't need his dad. That's pretty cool. So that's like one example. Another thing the movie's pretty fond of is like, and I guess this is something that's sort of vaguely interesting is like, the word asshole is said a lot when Chris Hemsworth and Daniel Brühl are either describing the other person or themselves. Like there's this kind of weird thing in the movie where it's like Peter Morgan and Ron Howard want you to know that you're watching two assholes or something. Like they're not likable people.
Was the movie rated PG-13?
No, it's rated R, actually.
Oh, so they could have said motherfucker.
Yeah, they could have. So that's, you know.
Because usually assholes just what like a screenwriter who's trying to keep it PG-13 does. It's like, well, I need these guys to curse their anger. And yeah, but I can't say cocksucker or motherfucker, so I guess I'll just go with asshole.
I think actually Chris Hemsworth calls Daniel Brühl the C word once.
What?
Yeah, I'm not going to say it.
So you've got vaginas and assholes and
a lot of orifices.
Yeah.
Any mention of
so dick? Yeah.
No.
There could be.
Okay.
So
kind of covering your spectrum here.
Yeah. But like, so the funny thing about how often that word is repeated is it's just like when it's said about Chris Hemsworth, especially, you're just kind of like, yeah, like he is a complete asshole. So it's like, is it supposed to be a joke? Or are we supposed to not like him, but still like watch him and be invested in his journey? And it's just sort of like this odd element of the script. but one thing that, I mean, I guess if there's one thing I liked about the movie, it was the Niki Lauda character and how sort of, I don't know, intelligent he was about his work and how practical he was. Like, I definitely thought he was the cooler of the two, and he like knew what he was doing. There's like sort of the climactic scene is like this race and it's pouring rain outside, and so Daniel Brühl sort of stands up and he's like, guys, we probably shouldn't like race in these cars when it's pouring rain and people are gonna get hurt. And then Chris Hemsworth is like, oh, you're a pussy, like we gotta race. And then everyone else is like, yeah, like race. So it's kind of like, no, I think like Daniel Brühl's probably right. You probably shouldn't race. So yeah, there's that.
Was the movie, because in the trailers the movie looks beautiful. Is it beautiful?
It's shot by Anthony Dodd Mantle, who has shot a lot of like Danny Boyle stuff, and it's sort of getting a lot of praise for the cinematography. And it's definitely like sleek. But I mean, it feels like, especially in the racing sequences, like really digitally manipulated. Like in that climactic race I mentioned, it's like raining and stuff, and the clouds are almost like, they just look so fake that it's like a distraction for me. And then a lot of the dialogue scenes are like, you've got these lens flares and people like walking around like they're gods, and it's just like, all right, like whatever, like I don't really care about this dude who's an asshole.
It did seem like it was kind of a just from the trailers, and I still want to see this movie, and I'm hoping to get out and see it this week.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of seemed like, you know, very stock characters. Like,
yeah.
Niki Lauda is like amazing but independent, and he's like shaking up the world, and Chris Hemsworth seemed almost like a Ron Burgundy-esque type, like, racer.
What is that?
Like, you know, because, like, in the trailer, it seems like he just sleeps with everyone, and he's very full of himself, he's pretty.
Yeah, he's like a playboy. And,
I think the trailer literally has him, like, seducing that British woman who is a seductress, or basically this actress was in, she was in Captain America, and like her only purpose was to like kiss Captain America to cause like some dramatic tension between him and Haley Atwell. And like she was in the first season of The Tudors. She played Anne Boleyn, and she's like really been pigeonholed as just like hot actress who will sleep her way to the top and or will create dramatic tension through her sluttiness.
You're talking about like the character she plays, not.
Yeah, not her.
Yeah.
Well, she's in Game of Thrones too, and she's like the same character.
I'm looking up I don't even know who this is.
Is it like Alexandra Maria Lara? Because that's actually Daniel Brühl's wife, but I don't know.
She played a very sexy Nazi in Francis Ford Coppola's Youth Without Youth.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Natalie Dormer.
Oh, Natalie Dormer. Okay. Oh yeah. See, that's like. She's credited as Nurse Gemma.
Yes, she is.
So this would lead me to indicate that she is the person who, in one of the earliest scenes in the film, Chris Hemsworth walks into a hospital because he's hurt from a race, and there's like a 20-second shot where he like walks into the lobby and all the women in the lobby just like stare at him.
Right.
And then he goes into the operating room, and like 5 seconds later, that nurse is like closing the door and they're making out. And so that was a little bit ridiculous. And the other thing about that that's sort of not satisfying is that like Chris Hemsworth's a pretty good actor and like this is a good role for him. Mm-hmm. But there's like no imagination to the scenes where he's like seducing women. It's just like shows him like he looks at a woman and then they go to the bathroom.
Movie guy who's like, hey, you're hot, want to bang? And the girl's just like, yeah.
Like there's one that's like a stewardess. Scene with that, and it's just like, oh my god.
So thin characters, sometimes beautiful. Races, yeah. Were the races thrilling?
They were okay. Because there's a lot of like weird close-ups on like gears and like parts of a car. That was a little bit odd, but like one thing that I was going to mention that's kind of funny is like, so Daniel Brühl's character, like they give him a love interest. And like the only thing that ends up being unlikable about his character is that he seems like such a neglectful husband and like not passionate at all, because like you sort of like him for how much he knows about his work and like how sort of smart he is about it, and like he's completely like an unromantic man, so like all these times he's like with his wife and it just seems like you don't know like why she's with him or like why they have any kind of relationship whatsoever. So it's just sort of like something that's supposed to give the character like an emotional investment, whatever, but like just sort of confusing because he seems like a very like not good husband. But yeah, those are some thoughts. I don't know. The movie's getting good reviews, so I don't know. Check it out and see if you disagree.
Just another note about Natalie Dormer before we go. She was nominated for the Monte Carlo TV Festival. She was nominated for the Golden Nymph Award. So there's that. And she will also be in The Counselor, credited as the blonde.
Oh, wow.
She's a good actress. I don't know how I feel about how she's being used now that I'm looking through her filmography. But yeah, I guess that's just where she's at. So that's Rush. Go out and see it if you'd like. Rush out to see it. Exactly. I was going to say, hopefully I'll see it. And if I do, next week I'll give my thoughts on it. Nick, are you ever intending on seeing this film?
HBO.
Okay.
Yeah. At some point, I guess. Work.
Okay, so that's that. We can move on now into our primary review, which is of Enough Said, the newest film by writer-director Nicole Holofcener. It stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus, James Gandolfini, and is supported by Catherine Keener and Toni Collette.
So you're a masseuse?
I am.
What is it that you do?
I'm a poet.
And I'm a dreamer.
No, really, I am.
Oh, you really a poet?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. This is Albert.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
You know, my friend Eva was just telling me that there is not one guy at this party that she's attracted
what?
To.
It's okay. There's no one here I'm attracted to either.
All right. Great.
Some guy you met at the party wants your number.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, did I get the day wrong?
No. Why?
Because you're wearing your pajamas?
It's Sunday. I'd like to be comfortable.
Oh, good.
So we were all going to talk about Rush to begin with, but we decided to talk about Enough Said, which is about two people who meet at a party, both of whom have previous marriages and daughters who are going to college, and the fledgling romance that they embark upon. There's an aspect of this movie that's given away in the trailer that I feel is really detrimental to the film itself and the enjoyment therein.
Yeah, I saw that trailer before I saw the film.
Yeah.
And then when I went to see the film and it wasn't revealed until like maybe 50 minutes in, I was like surprised.
It was really annoying. Like I hadn't seen the trailer until I went and saw Thanks for Sharing last week. And
did you
I
like
was
that?
Like, Thanks for Sharing was, it was pretty good. It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, it's like, we don't have to talk about it, but it's fine. It's a fine film. Good performances. Oddly good performance from Pink, which is interesting. Tim Robbins is Tim Robbins as Tim Robbins. Patrick Fugit, always good to see him in a film. Anyway, we're not talking about Thanks for Sharing, which is out in limited release now. But before that film, I saw the trailer for Enough Said, and I had the same reaction as you, Danny. I figured, like, oh, that's going to be like a thing. It's going to be in the first 15 minutes. People are going to know this, and that's going to be the entire thrust. And it wasn't. And they do play up the reveal kind of like a thing that you shouldn't have known already.
Yeah, it's very strange.
It's very strange. So, I mean, it's in the trailer. I feel like we can't call it a spoiler, but I mean, if people haven't seen this movie and they're just hearing about it now for the first time, do we still want to treat it as a spoiler?
I think we can do right where Fox Searchlight did
wrong. Okay, so we'll do right by this one. We won't talk about the reveal. Don't watch the trailer. If you're interested in seeing this, go check it out. It's quite a funny movie, very observant. So do it. Just go do it. But yeah, so we're not going to talk about that. But these two divorced people who kind of have a fledgling romance and the various problems that arise because of their pasts and the way that they view their pasts that go into making their new love work, as well as a lot of pointed commentary on, you know, growing old and seeing your children leave. There's a lot in this film. Let's talk about it. Nick Newman, you were the one who initially said we should do this instead of Rush, and we all acquiesced. So why don't you tell us first what drew you to the film, and then whether or not the film lived up to your expectations?
So, Nicole Holofcener is not a name many people might recognize, but she's kind of carved out a place for herself in independent American film as sort of the rare female voice who can work kind of at a somewhat consistent rate since she's been making movies for over 15 years, which makes her something of a rarity. So there's that. And also, there's kind of the appeal of the movie, which is that it's one of the last from James Gandolfini, who sadly passed away in June. And it has a nice pairing with him and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And it seemed like it'd be very pleasant. Rather see it than Rush, frankly. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, it's playing near me, so it kind of just happened. Just like many of the things in the film. Yeah. Just happened.
It just happened.
Life just happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Life found a way.
Yeah.
Sorry, if we're just throwing out some stuff about life, I mean.
Right.
Anyway, go for
now,
it.
So yeah, the film itself, I think, is rather good. My sort of initial reaction to it was kind of that it was kind of minor in some sense. It's a small film, and it doesn't really have much in the way of momentous incident at hand. And I think it's sort of, even just the craft of it is kind of simple, which is not a bad thing per se. I mean, it's not a showy film, but it is nicely constructed. Overall, I was pretty pleased with it, not only because of Gandolfini, who, you know, I mean, there is sort of a sad undercurrent to the film because he's really, really quite good in this. And you see how well he fits into the comedy role, which I think he did well on The Sopranos, for instance, and in Killing Them Softly last year, where he could be quite funny. But this is an out-and-out comedy, and he acquits himself really well against Dreyfus, who it's been kind of interesting to follow in recent years how I think how completely she's broken away from Seinfeld or the Seinfeld image in a way, where now, even as someone like myself who has seen every episode of Seinfeld at least three times, which if you think about it kind of adds up to a lot of time, with Veep and now this, it's just interesting how I don't think of her as Elaine anymore. She's kind of broken into this new phase of her career now that she's a bit older, and it's really fascinating to follow. Overall, I like the film. It's very nice. It's pleasant. And I did tweet somewhat controversially. Actually, there was no controversy because nobody cares. But I did tweet that as a study of love-torn 40-somethings, I found it probably more immediately affecting than Before Midnight, which is don't get me wrong, the two films are not that similar.
No, they're not similar at all.
I'm not raising many comparisons, but I do think there are overlaps to be found.
I don't agree with you, but I will allow you to speak.
And so I think I sort of like this movie's portrayal of such things more significantly. So,
well, I mean, okay, so just to address that, because someone's got to, I mean, in Before Midnight, these people have been together for, what, 10 years now?
Something like that, yeah.
And they've made massive sacrifices. They've been a huge part of one another's lives. And in this, they're meeting for the first time. you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it's a completely different thing. This is an incipient romance.
I had a feeling Brian would not take kind of comparison.
I mean, I don't mind the comparison. They both do plumb some depths that aren't usually touched upon. And they both are, you know, not. I think Before Midnight's more psychologically eloquent, but they are both just as psychologically acute, if that makes sense. If that doesn't make me sound like a pretentious asshole.
Hey, I liked Before Midnight, ma'am. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I can see the comparison. I don't know that it's even possible to say that one is greater than or equal to the other, because they're both looking at very different things. But I mean, yeah, I can see how you'd say that. Danny, what were your thoughts on this film?
Yeah, well, like at this point I almost feel like enough has been said.
Okay.
I was saving an enough said joke. And I don't know.
You can still do yours,
Nick. It's fine. Yeah. You've said enough.
All right.
No. Just
dear.
Jesus. Anyway.
Yeah. So enough said. The film. Positive. Seem like I'm kind of agreeing with you both on this one.
Did you like it more than Rush?
Yes. I. If we want to get technical about it, I. Because I reviewed both of these films for the site, I gave Enough Said a B, and I gave Rush a C, which is very interesting.
That
They're
was
different
pretty
grades.
Technical. Pretty technical. Yeah, different letter.
Yeah, very
now,
different.
Would you say that the 40-something romance in Rush was less well observed than the 40-something romance?
I think that's something we can safely say. Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
But yeah, going to Enough Said. You know, definitely. Very heartfelt Gandolfini performance, which is kind of like the soul of the movie for me. And it's really sort of pleasing to see him. I mean, I would call this like a co-lead movie. I don't know if you guys agree, but I think it's pleasing to see him get this much more screen time than some of the films he had last year, and yet still seem like someone who's just kind of not playing it for shows at all. And he just seems like sort of a character actor naturally sort of coming into this role. And I appreciated that. We can get into the sort of twist more later on, but you know, in like the first half hour of the film, Julia Louis-Dreyfus and him are just so good together that once the twist makes itself known, I was a little bit sort of annoyed with the movie. But I do think by the end that it earns it a little bit, and I can elaborate on that later. I still like the one thing about the movie that just like keeps it sort of in the minor realm, like Nick said, is that it just kind of it's visually boring.
Very.
Yeah.
It's a nice cinematography.
Which, it's clean.
It's nice. Yeah.
It's well. It's
clean.
It's properly lit.
Yeah, I mean that's basically what. Yeah, that's what I'm feeling from it.
Didn't see any focus problems.
There's no lens flare, which is
but
good.
Like even. Yeah.
No shaky cam.
But like even. Yeah, totally.
Freezing and mise en scène is all. Yeah.
Writing my paper. Writing my paper. The mise en scène of.
Enough said.
So yeah, just to like to sum up as positive on the film, definitely worth seeing. It seems like a pretty comfortable film to recommend, and like you could be pretty certain that people will like it. And yeah, maybe some kind of Oscar push for Gandolfini if that happens.
I mean, that's what people have been talking about it, but
I don't know. It would be nice
All right, so I guess it's my turn, and I can bleed into that. I mean, I like what Gandolfini's doing, and he creates a very, like, sympathetic character. He's like the slovenly husband from every sitcom, but given, like, some grace and, like, self-awareness and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
which is enough for this movie to be better than most movies that would attempt something like that. And it is, it's a movie that really does delve into this idea of, like, accepting someone for who they are and, you know, growing your love out of what you know of them rather than, like, what you, like, think of them, you know, what you first expect. And, yeah, so in that way, I mean, I think Gandolfini does a lot and creates a good character, but I mean, like, as far as best actor or something like that, I mean, like, I don't know. You know, I'm not speaking ill of the dead. He's still fantastic in the movie, but I mean, like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis won for Lincoln. Gandolfini's just Gandolfini being Gandolfini, and he's an eminently charming, funny, you know, guy. It's very easy for him to give humanity to a character who could be flat written on the page. I just don't think that that's best actor quality.
No.
But I mean, he's yeah.
Thing.
I mean, it's definitely a good role to go out on or to have come out after you've gone out. But you know, it's not the high watermark of his career. I think he did better work in Killing Them Softly.
Mm-hmm.
Was he even nominated for that? I don't believe he was. Yeah. That movie was just kind of ignored.
One thing I sort of mentioned this briefly in my review, but like Killing Them Softly is like an insanely stylized film. But like with Gandolfini's film or with Gandolfini's scenes, like Dominic does nothing other than just like put the camera on him.
Mm-hmm.
So you can almost like feel just through that, like how good of an actor he can be, like where Andrew Dominic's just like, all right, like I don't need to do anything, like just say your lines.
Look, I've got this. Yeah, so here's my thing. This movie actually kind of has a lot in common with Thanks for Sharing, just in terms of how I feel about it. It's a very written movie. You can feel the writer behind it and the inherent cleverness in the script. And while the actors are fine, I mean, I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She's fantastic in Veep. You know, she's been great in everything else. I mean, Seinfeld, obligatory Seinfeld mention. But the writing is so obvious that it's still hard to get past it. And it then just feels like a really well-written thing that you're watching rather than a well-done movie. The same for Thanks for Sharing. Like, the writing is all there. Like, all the little pieces come together. In the end, like, people are very good at articulating their feelings and ideas. It's great that they're movies that are both comprised of people who are not trying to sustain some massive charade in... Charade? Fuck. as I was approaching that word, I said to myself, don't say charade, it's charade. Anyway, so they're not trying to sustain some massive charade. They're not like, you know, I told him I'm a gynecologist, but I'm really a carpenter. What am I going to do? Like... they're just truthful. Like they're upfront with all their issues and problems, but they just have this way of like turning much more interesting secondary characters, both of whom are young women, into like another aspect of the main character's problems that needs to get sorted out. In Thanks for Sharing, there's a character named Becky, played by Emily Mead, who is in two scenes, and one of the scenes she functions purely to show how Mark Ruffalo's character has kind of fallen down on himself and like the dark path that could be there for him, you know, to be oblique and not give spoilers. In this one, there's Julia Louis-Dreyfus's daughter's friend Chloe, played by Tavi Gevinson, and she's fine in the film. She's, you know, good, but like she's obviously got some shit going on with her mom, and she doesn't seem to have a good home situation, and she's always over at her friend's house just hanging out with her mom because this girl is so starved for any kind of strong positive female role model that she can open up to, and she's being like abandoned by her friend constantly. Like Julia Louis-Dreyfus's daughter is another interesting character because it's just like there's something happening. Like, something's got to be going on there.
Yeah, I thought that daughter's friend character was a little bit odd.
Yeah, and so, like, there's just a deeper question there, and both of those characters in those movies are only there to serve as, like, this weird fulcrum on which the character's understanding of themselves will change. And so now I'm kind of like, I want more information about them. But that's just, again, where the writing comes from, because you're not looking at these people as people. You're looking at them as a character point or a plot point to advance your characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a little bit of a problem with that. It's obviously something that's been going on in a lot of films lately. I'm not sure why. I don't know why we can't just, like, why we have to, like, sacrifice these poor, young, beautiful women to the gods of the screenplay. Because we'll talk about in spoilers what happens in this movie. But after the event happens, I was just like, but wait, what's going to happen to her? Her life's going to be this new thing now, and it's probably not going to be great. But all in all, I thought that the scenes with Albert and Eva, James Gandolfini and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I mean, they were great. They have a great chemistry. I like the earnestness about growing old and the honesty regarding failed relationships. And, you know, it's not like there's not really an acrimonious divorce in the entire thing. Like, everyone's still kind of talking to each other. And yeah, it's a fine, inoffensive, fun time at the movies. I've probably laughed more earnestly at this than I did at many other comedies I've seen this year. So that's, you know, just because I'm saying it's obviously written doesn't mean it's not well written. So there's that.
Right.
Yeah, so that's my thoughts.
But
oh, also both have a very flat visual style. Nothing going on in the cinematography department.
No, but I guess the way I feel is that the cinematography is fine. It's not.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's just, that's why I said it's something well written to watch, but it's not like there's nothing.
Right, but
what,
I guess,
but what would you do?
Like, well, I guess I just ask what you demand of the film from that angle.
No, and that's the problem. Like, I can't think of something to demand, but it's just, it's almost like it would be a better play than a film. You know, that's kind of why I said it was like a television show. It just felt like a 3-camera sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, and that's fine. I mean, like, that's what it called for, but I guess I was just, I might have probably just been in the mood for something else. Probably because I'm just excited that Gravity's coming out next week. I get to see Gravity again. But, you know, like, that's a movie where it obviously needs something more. This isn't a knock on the movie. I'm not saying, like, don't see Enough Said because it's shot like a sitcom. Like, still see it because it's legitimately hilarious and it actually has some interesting things to say. And you'll be missing a lot of good performances if not. It's just, you know, there's nothing to recommend there, but it doesn't detract from my recommendation. I probably just shouldn't have brought it up.
Yeah, maybe you just shouldn't talk.
Yeah, you just didn't. Yeah, no. I'll post this podcast without talking.
Maybe maybe it's Enough Said.
Enough said. Good Lord. There was one other thing, just like, I mean, again, just going to the writing, like, there's a subplot about a maid who puts things places, but maybe she doesn't.
Oh, that's weird, right. Too.
Which kind of doesn't have much place.
No.
Unless there's some theme I'm missing about misplacing things.
I kept looking for that. I was like, is this going into something? Like,
so,
yeah.
So I want to get into a problem I had with the film. Weirdly enough, this is a problem I had with, not to keep bringing it up, this is also a problem I had with Before Midnight. But I don't think that it's, like, you know, there's much to be noted that they're both issues. But I did find the writing of the Julia Louis-Dreyfus character in the third act a bit antagonistic.
Really?
In a way. I did. I found that the way she ended up treating Gandolfini's character was really unbecoming. Really,
yeah, I guess that's the third act.
Right, and it felt sort of like a thing that the movie needed to do so that it could have a bit more tension.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
but I felt that it kind of was going overboard. Where there's that scene at the dinner table where she's being almost kind of a monster.
Yeah, kind of a.
And I understand.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the word, but I'm pretty sure people can guess what I'm going to say.
a busybody.
Yeah.
Yes. So. You know, I was thinking to myself how I understand that the movie needs to develop something that can give it a little more push because there isn't a great deal of it. But one of the things I liked about the film was that it had sort of this easygoing nature to it. It didn't feel entirely correct that she would fall to the, you know, she would become a victim to the suspicions of the created by...
Wait.
Okay.
Spoiler. Okay.
Okay. So yes, well,
should we just go into spoilers?
Yeah, I was about to say, before we're going to talk about, if we're going to start talking about the third act, we might as well go into spoilers, because a lot of what you're talking about is influenced by what we have elided over, trying to be better than the trailer. So you know, you've got your problems with the third act. Julia Louis-Dreyfus does become a bit of a monster in one scene. I think that the writing supports that change, probably not to the extent that it goes to and the rapidity with which she arrives at that level, but I still think it's kind of okay. Danny, spoiler-free thoughts on that, and then we'll give our final summation, and then we'll go into spoilers.
I would argue that a lot of the stuff, this is going to be really vague, but like a lot of the writing that's done sort of in response to the twist feels really contrived and like in service of the plot. But I think it's justified to an extent thematically. So it's sort of like, yeah, I think that scene where she's a monster is like pretty ridiculous, and I don't really even believe that she would act that way ever. But I think it sort of works like thematically, because I think the movie is sort of eventually becomes like a pretty serious investigation of like how hard it is to go back into a relationship after being divorced. So I kind of feel like a lot of the plot contrivances are just sort of like highlighting that. And so I was like forgiving of them a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it more in spoilers. But in general, we're all positive on this. Think people should go check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's,
I'll be interested. Yeah.
Like I saw it, actually, Brian, you tweeted this. I was the youngest person in the theater by at least three presidencies. And it was kind of weird. It is sort of, I don't know. I guess maybe there's something about it which is attractive to an older set, because the actors themselves are in their 50s. I guess, but I don't know. That wasn't at all a deterrent for me. I liked the truth and honesty it brought with that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a draw, where it was
just kind of funny though, because it's like me and I and everyone's parents are going to see Enough Said.
Yeah.
Actually, my mom texted me last night and she was like, your dad and I watched Miami Vice tonight. We weren't quite as enamored as you were, but we're going to Enough Said tomorrow. And I was just like, oh, okay, that's good. Like, yeah, Enough Said will be a good second viewing.
Yeah. Apparently, its opening weekend, it made $58,200 per theater.
It's not bad.
No. It has expanded since then and is now currently sitting with just shy of $2.5 million.
Well, good for Enough Said.
Yeah. I mean, it's out there. You can see it, and I think it's worth it. And it's good. It's good that a movie like this is making the money.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was only rated PG-13.
Really?
Yeah.
There's there's cursing. There's a little bit of sex. There's
Yeah, it definitely feels...
There's discussions of body parts.
Yeah.
This is kind of weird.
Yeah, this is weird.
I think Hall of Center like knows people in the MPAA.
Hall of Center's name really carries
a lot.
A lot
of water. All right, well, let's get into spoilers. So spoilers for Enough Said. What we have neglected to mention is that, well, for I guess this could have gone into my bitching about the movie in the normal sense, but it's another one of those movies where like people have not real jobs. You know, like like Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her character, Eva. Is it Eva or Ava? I don't remember.
Eva?
Her character Eva is a masseuse. And she lives in a nice ranch house, supports her daughter, and is able to drive a Prius.
It's California, baby.
That's my only thing was like, I bet that a fucking masseuse who comes to your house actually does charge enough that maybe they could afford all that shit. James Gandolfini also has the probably real, but still like kind of twee. Like, I feel like every independent film like this, like, we have to give... We can't just have
like
him
a cool
be like
profession.
A carpenter. He has to be something new and interesting. So he like is a archivist at a Museum of American Television.
Right.
So there's that. And then what? Her friend, played by Toni Collette, is a psychologist or psychotherapist of some kind.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a good joke about Catherine Keener.
Catherine Keener being a poet.
Yeah, which makes for a funny moment where Julia Louis-Dreyfus kind of can't quite believe it.
Yeah. And that's like, that's her comedy. Like, if you watch Veep or, you know, Seinfeld or anything, like, she always, like, that foot in the mouth type of situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what she excels at.
So I think the movie is a little aware of their comfortable lifestyle.
I also do like the fact that everyone's asking her a lot of weird questions about being a masseuse.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like, you know, I guess in another movie, it'd just be like, I'm a masseuse. Ah, and then everyone's like, all right, whatever. But in this, they're like, first of all, I haven't heard the word boner said as much as I have in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone asks, you know, if people get erections or if she gets hit on or blah, blah, blah. But so what happens is she meets Catherine Keener and James Gandolfini at a party, not knowing that they were formerly married. She becomes Catherine Keener's masseuse and starts dating James Gandolfini. And when she realizes this, she doesn't tell anyone, and she refers to Catherine Keener as her human trip advisor. And she starts, like, finding out what caused their marriage to dissolve as a way of insulating herself against possibly making the same mistakes. This leads to her becoming more hyper-aware and critical of certain things that James Gandolfini does, which had not previously been a problem but are now a problem because she knows that was something that was wrong with someone else. It blows up, things go wrong, but the movie ends on an up note as they begin talking again and kind of fall back into their easily relaxed rhythms, kind of willing to accept what happened and maybe move on. So you were saying that her moment of really letting all of that shit get to her when they're at the dinner, the double date, and she talks about buying a calorie book and and then talking about his whispering.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, let's be honest, like, that guy is not fucking whispering.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it was a culmination of a lot of things, and she does become a little shrewish.
Yes.
A bit of a harpy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is weird because I can see how a person could become that way, but I don't see how Ava becomes that way.
Yeah. Part of like the sort of strangeness of that plot element is, like, first of all, Catherine Keener, she's been in like a few Hollow Center films, and she's sort of normally like a really quirky, like, energetic actress, and I like her a lot. And she's given a weird role here where she's like intentionally bland, kind of.
She's like very centered.
And also, yeah, she's just like a Los Angeles poet or whatever. I don't know. But like, and nothing she ever really says about Gandolfini to Eva is like really meaningful. It's just like, oh, he does some weird things with the guacamole.
Yeah.
Like he was on a diet and then he stopped because people do that all the time.
Literally.
And like, yeah, so it's just like,
it was very petty
never,
things.
Yeah, and it never really seems like there's a reason for Julia Louis-Dreyfus to like take any of that information seriously or be invested in it. And she's also like a nice person. So once it gets to that blow up, like, that's a little bit forced. So yeah, it's odd and problematic a little bit.
Yeah, because it is like, it's not like, oh, he cheated on me. Like, she was saying, like, he's clumsy in bed. By this point, they've already slept together numerous times. She should know that that's not particularly true. it just seems like maybe she's concerned, but they didn't really bring this up. Like, she should have been concerned that she was going through a honeymoon period and all these things would start to annoy her. But instead, it seemed as though, being instructed that they were annoying, she began to feel that she should just think they were annoying. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was weird. I didn't quite get it. And she was like, the thing is, it was like more like the confluence of all the things she was doing at that party. Because like, honestly, like if I was him and we were doing the whispering thing, like, at some point it could have been funny, but earlier she'd criticized him on his weight. And so I feel like that was it. But like, I feel like you could have started with the whispering and then moved into the weight. I feel like it moved from like playful tapping. Like, it should have moved from playful tapping to, like, punch in the face, and it started with punch in the face and then went to playful tapping. So it was just weirdly constructed. It was, like, the one really off note, I guess, that I could feel, but I was okay with it in general-ish. because it became apparent that that was the poisoning of their relationship, and they needed to illustrate that. I did feel, like, really bad for James Gandolfini throughout the film, because Albert's, like, a legitimately nice guy. He doesn't seem to have any malice in him. And his, like, one flaw is that he cares too much for his daughter. And he's just getting shit-talked, like, a lot. And I guess that's how all of human relationships work, but good Lord, like, the poor man.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's an imbalance in... I mean, it's kind of interesting how there is an imbalance, and so you see how nice he is to her, and then the descriptions by Catherine Keener's character, but I think there is a bit too much... I don't think there's sort of a proper sprinkling of both. There's a bit too much of him sort of being his good guy to give Catherine Keener's comments a full weight. And so, yeah, like, you just... I mean, you feel sorry for him, which maybe is part of the idea, but I don't know if you're also supposed to find her contemptible.
I think you are, actually, because later on, like, when Julia Louis-Dreyfus is talking about her dissolved relationship with her ex-husband, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of that same pettiness. Like, they go out and they have, like, a dinner conversation. Like, sure, they talk about the cookies and blah, blah, blah. But, like, they seem as though they've genuinely come to a point where they can accept that it just wasn't meant to be. Mm-hmm. And that it wasn't, like... So many noises happening in my room right now. I don't know what any of that... Anyway. What was I saying? So they've come to a realization that they're just not meant to be together. And they've kind of found peace in that. And I feel like Catherine Keener isn't willing to accept that it could have been her fault as well. It's just like she's just not into him, and she's gonna continue to paint him in the worst light. Which unfortunately is what happens in some relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Because they offset it. Like at the end, like, you know, Eva and her husband, like, go and see their daughter off together. And, you know, they actually, like, you know, they put their arms around one another, and he says, you know, we made a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like they balanced it out there, you know, but you would have had to have a whole other divorced couple in there to balance out the bad woman with another bad man.
And I think the movie kind of tries to do that with, oh, by the way, I should mention that, that the thing with the husband is actually a really weird Seinfeld reunion too. Did you guys notice who her ex-husband was?
No.
Maybe not. It's a guy named Toby Huss, who's like an American comedic actor, and he played The Wiz.
Oh my God, he did.
Yeah. So when he showed up, I was pleasantly surprised. But that was I wonder if that was intentional on her part.
I wonder.
Anyway, I mean, I think the movie kind of tries to do that a bit with the Toni Collette-Ben Falcone relationship.
Yeah.
Sort of melange mm-hmm. of marital unhappiness. And it's sort of...
Which is really weird, though, because, again, like, I felt like in that, again, Toni Collette was... And this might just because we're men. Like, we can be straight up about that. We're dudes.
And we hate women.
We have a healthy hatred of women. A healthy distrust.
Yes.
I wouldn't call it contempt, but, you know, close. Well, what I'm saying is, like, I can more readily assume the point of view of the men. So when the men are talking about how their women don't want them to bring cookies home because the women will eat all of them, and the men are like, we'll just exercise self-control. Like, why should we have to forego our cookies so that you won't be tempted? I'm like, fuck yeah. But I mean, like, that's the problem of something like this, where it's just like, I mean, I don't know. Like, is it possible that there's not, I don't know. I was just like weirded out by that whole conversation. Because it's like, don't get bread. Like, no one's going to eat the bread. And he's like, well, people might want bread. I'm going to get the bread. And then she eats all of it. And she's like upset.
Oh, yeah. The bread was funny.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, she'd hate me for bringing home the cookies because she'd hate herself for eating all of them. And then the guy who's still married was like, well, I don't understand. Why can't you? Why does he have to forgo what he wants? And the guy, the husband, is constantly talking about being fair. Like, his wife wants him to fire the housekeeper, and he's like, well, I had to fire someone else, like a gardener or something. He's like, it's your turn to fire someone. And she's like, you're obsessed with things being fair. And it's like, well, what's wrong with that? And they never really make a good statement about why things can't be quote-unquote fair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a thing about sacrifice.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because there's never a point where it seems like she's sacrificing anything for him.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's... I guess it's about this imbalance I speak of where, you know, you have to figure out sort of what is necessary in this relationship for there to be kind of a fair shake. And the movie's way of going about that, I think, is actually for the most part effective. It's just I think it's because I liked some parts of the film so much that when these inconsistencies spring up, it feels like something the movie should not have had as an issue to begin with.
Exactly.
So yeah, I don't know. Maybe a little script polish would have helped.
Yeah, especially between that relationship between Toni Collette and her husband Ben Falcone.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just weird. I don't know that I quite understood what some of their skirmishes were about or what they were saying.
That's just love. You never know.
I guess. I mean, there is an inherent uncertainty in all of love and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, it's just like she's not doing a really good job of explicating her point.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the movie, like you said, it's so good at that, that for it to kind of fall down in that respect is odd to me.
Yeah.
But in general, very good movie. I enjoyed it quite a lot. Though, when Eva gets caught in her lie, I was like, you could probably explain your way out of this pretty easily.
Yeah.
But she was just so flustered, and she's like...
She was really flustered.
She knew she was lying, so she couldn't tell that she couldn't pretend that she wasn't lying.
Yeah, and like she had to admit what was going on.
Yeah, that she knew it for a while.
And at that point, she's really reckoning with her actions.
It is true that she is doing that. Oh, man. So any final thoughts on this?
Nice movie.
Yeah.
Good film.
Nice movie.
As I said, it is kind of unfortunate that we won't get to see more of this from Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Because, it's interesting to see him go in this direction late in his career.
And it is the kind of movie that makes you realize, like, who you've lost, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you had put, like, I was going to say, like, Matthew McConaughey in this role. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, Matthew McConaughey has been having a renaissance. But
weird casting.
It wouldn't really work that much. But, I mean, like, I don't think there are a lot of other guys who could fill this role in the way that James Gandolfini does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
McConaughey could fill it if he was like in mud mode. People are like, why do you look like you live in the woods?
I had a problem. He always really looked like he lived in the woods. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is fantastic. If you're not watching Veep, do it. And she's brilliant in this film. Like I really liked her and her character and what she was doing. And it is good to have like a female-centric film written and directed by a woman.
Yeah.
You know, as little as I try to let the gender of the creators of a film affect me, like it's hard not to have a cultural conversation about the underrepresentation of women in writing and directing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet a very even hand with the characters of all gender. So good on you, Hall of Center. good on everyone who's in this. So it's out now in limited release. Check it out. And let's move on. Blu-rays and DVDs. The Disney Vault is opening to gift us with The Little Mermaid. So check that out. It's actually a good movie. I know all the songs by heart.
I wonder how they open the Disney Vault. Is it like a big wheel that they turn?
Yeah.
And it makes
you haven't
like
seen the really animation? Sound. It's like a massive vault. It's like where they kept the Warner Brothers and their Warner sister Dot.
Oh.
Oh.
Is Song of the South in there? Could someone get it?
It's in the back. It's they jacketed it in something else that no one wants to see.
You can actually watch it on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's sweet.
It's not really a hint when I just say out loud what you can do.
hint. You can watch it on YouTube. Hint.
Yeah.
So the Little Mermaid's coming out. It's a great film. Unrelated. I really want a Blu-ray copy of Sleeping Beauty. I don't know why. I think it's because I've been listening to the ballet by Tchaikovsky, and they borrow phrases from that ballet for the film itself. So now I kind of really want to see it again. Mm. Also because that old school Disney animation, like, let's not mince words, it's fucking groundbreaking. So I kind of want to see that again.
One of my first film memories is actually a shot from Sleeping Beauty.
Which one?
It's like a horse-drawn carriage going up the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember anything else from it, but when I was maybe like 3 or so, I was watching that in my bed. I just remember that one shot.
Yeah, there's that one shot. There's the shot where they set fire to all the spindles. I mean, there's just a lot. There's a lot of really good shots in that. And again, the music is great. And animation is beautiful. So check that out. Well, not that, because apparently it could be out. I don't know. If you can find it, take a look. Let us know what you think. Little Mermaid's out. This Is the End, also out. I don't know if anyone saw that. We have a re-release of From Here to Eternity. Blu-ray 3D re-release of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, God damn it.
The Croods, which I saw.
And, why?
We can
why? Talk about. Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones.
What? No, no. Why did you see The Croods?
I saw The Croods for the television show that I do.
Oh,
you talked about it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that one.
Oh, well, get on it.
What were the other two?
The other two that time, shit. It was The Croods and, wow, I can't remember.
Oh, I might have actually skipped The Croods.
Do you remember what the other two
was
were?
Was it like Red 2?
I've talked about Red 2, but it was on a different one than The Croods. It was, yeah. Oh, The Croods, The Place Beyond the Pines, and something else.
All
right. We run the gamut on that show. The Croods is actually not bad.
Okay.
I will say, like, if you're in the mindset of, like, a child, like, you know, if you if you're in the mindset of what a film made for a kid would be, you could do worse than The Croods.
Yeah, but kids are stupid.
But... okay.
I mean, what? The kids are stupid, so it's not like I'm gonna, you know.
I'm not saying you should see it, Nick, and pretend you're a child. I'm saying if there's a child that you would like to entertain, you can do worse than The Croods. I would put The Croods above, like, maybe even, I don't know. Turbo is good, too, so when Turbo comes out, you should check out Turbo.
Yeah, like, you've been seeing a lot of these animated works. Yeah,
they're not bad. I mean, like, The Croods has some funny moments. Nicolas Cage does fine work. There's some legitimately touching moments in The Croods. It's like a... it's a good film. Anyway. Glad for the clap. Let's move on. Frozen Ground, also starring Nicolas Cage.
Oh, I saw that.
Okay. We'll talk about it. Stuck on You. Fright Night 2. I don't know what that's about. And then some other stuff.
Torn Curtain.
Okay.
Which is a Hitchcock film starring Paul Newman and Julie Andrews. I've never seen that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I should see that.
And a re-release of Twilight Zone, the movie.
Oh, wow. Did they have Vic Morrow getting his head cut off?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Special features. Yeah. What do we think about these? What do we think about these? Like I said, The Croods is a fine choice for a family film if you've got a young child. Not as good as The Little Mermaid, which I will say is a fine film. Did anyone see This Is the End?
No, I wanted to, though.
I heard really good things. So, according to all my friends, you should see This Is the End.
Danny, did you see The Frozen Ground?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that like a month ago on iTunes, and it's already on Blu-ray. Yeah.
How is it?
That might give you an indication.
Okay.
It's sort of like, it's a really, it's like a completely serious film. And it's like based on a true story. And at the end of the film, there are like photographs of all the like victims and stuff.
Oh, God.
So it's like
it pulls an Argo.
It's actually just kind of uncomfortable because it's like a C or a D level film that's trying to like do justice to this really terrible true story of this killer.
Is it pictures of like grisly crime scenes, or is that what you mean?
No, they're like yearbook photos. I think they're like portraits of the victims.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and like so it's kind of
not worth.
I mean, it's like it's a pretty boring movie, and like. John Cusack and Nicolas Cage are both like giving pretty like even-handed performances. Like they're not really doing much, and so the whole thing is like pretty one note. And then it's awkward when you like realize it has these ambitions to like be a really powerful, like based on a true story thing.
All right. Well, not based on a true story, but. Still worth seeing Volcano, just for the scene where the fire department stops the volcano.
That would make sense.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. That was one of those good old-fashioned 90s disaster movies.
The cover is really funny. It's like Tommy Lee Jones running from destruction.
It's like, it's what, yeah, it's like basically a new, it's like, I hate these new covers where it's just like, let's just have someone running from smoke and flame. That's what they did with Volcano. Yeah. It sucks because the original one, I think, was like a literal volcano in the middle of LA and it was like, the coast is toast.
Yeah.
That was great. That's what I want from my movies that are like this. Lean into it, guys.
What's this movie called Jack Irish starring Guy Pearce?
I don't know. I've never heard of it before. Oh, it's apparently, it says series one, so it must be a BBC show.
That is a must watch.
Oh, this Australian noir could become the coolest show on television. Huh. I kind of want to see that now.
The original poster for Volcano is the same image, but it says, it's hotter than hell.
Jesus. A former criminal lawyer is getting his life back together and now spends his days as a part-time investigator, debt collector, apprentice cabinet maker, drinker, and finding those who don't want to be found, dead or alive. Jack Irish. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I would watch the hell out of that.
Yeah, that could be masterful. All
right, well, let's talk about what's in theaters. Coming to theaters next week, two films with completely different varying ambitions. One is Gravity, the follow-up to Children of Men by Alfonso Cuarón. It stars Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. It's about an astronaut who becomes stranded in the cold reaches of space just above Earth. The next is Runner Runner, directed by a guy you've never heard of called Brad Furman. Starring
director of The Lincoln Lawyer.
No, oh, that wasn't a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean that earnestly. I went to a happy hour on Friday and a girl told me that apparently everything I say sounds ironic. I honestly meant that. The Lincoln Lawyer was enjoyable.
Oh yeah, I kind of liked it. I thought you said it was terrible.
No, I said that was not a terrible movie.
Oh, okay, I got it.
So I guess my phrasing and my tone of voice.
Very big difference between terrible and not.
Yeah.
It wasn't a terrible movie. It was a good movie. Anyway, Ben Affleck, Justin Timberlake, and Gemma Arterton, along with Anthony Mackie, star in this film.
Can I make a Lincoln Lawyer digression?
Yeah.
So Dan Mecca, who's been on the show before, and. And another gentleman who was a friend of ours. The two of them had this. I saw them.
Wait, are we not saying the name for a reason?
I mean, no. Nobody would know who he is.
Okay.
I saw the two of them engaged in this drinking game where you watch The Lincoln Lawyer, and every time Matthew McConaughey has like a very McConaughey line delivery, which is sort of like he says something kind of sarcastic or cutting or a nice comeback, and he kind of like drops his voice, but he also speaks in a higher tone. So you can imagine it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Everyone knows what that is.
Every time he does that, you say, in a Matthew McConaughey voice, you say, Lincoln Lawyer, and you take a drink. Every time he has one of those lines, it's...
That is a good way to get fucked up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, those are both coming out. I have seen Gravity. I will be seeing Runner Runner early, so I can't make a judgment on Runner Runner, but everyone go and see Gravity.
All right.
Don't think about it. Just goddamn do it.
Did you see it in IMAX?
I did not see it in IMAX. I saw it in 3D.
Because I'm going to be near like one of the world's biggest IMAX screens on Friday, but the ticket is fucking like $21.
Jesus, I would still pay that.
Yeah.
I would pay it. I'm not saying you have to, but I would pay it.
Yeah,
this movie is fantastic. It is beautiful. I mean, spoiler alert for next week. I'm going to gush about Gravity. The 3D is astounding and well implemented. So check out Gravity, because if this movie doesn't make a lot of money, I'm going to find you and I'm going to hurt you. As for Runner Runner, it looks like it could be fun. Any thoughts, gentlemen?
Also, A Touch of Sin is coming out in limited. And then that was one we were all kind of excited about. And it's seems to be getting very good notices out of the New York Film Festival as well. I'm sure there will be A Touch of Sin if Nick wants to mention his tweet. Very, very funny tweet.
So the director of the film is his name is Zha Zhangka. So I tweeted, how much sin do you want with that, Mr. Zha? Just a touch, please. So I like to imagine him in a restaurant. They ask
ordering a touch.
How much sin do you want? Just a touch.
Anyway, Let's move on. Let's very briefly talk about something that we've watched on our own, and then we
can't sleep at night.
You can't sleep at night?
It was just like, I can't sleep at night knowing I make those tweets. I couldn't sleep at all last night, and I wonder if it was because of that.
Because you knew that tweet?
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's possible. Anyway, that's it. And yeah, let's talk about the things that we've seen on our own, and then we can get out of your way. So, gentlemen, briefly now, let's talk about something that we've watched on our own this week. Nick, why don't you kick us off?
In class on Monday, I watched a motion picture called Senso by Luchino Visconti. It's a 1954 Italian melodrama set in the 1860s and kind of a typical melodrama plot. Two people in love. There's some deception. There's some broken hearts. It's very lurid, expressive, beautiful colors. This sort of soaring musical score. It is classic melodrama. Italian style, and I really loved it. It's actually available from Criterion in a new restoration done by Scorsese's World Cinema Foundation. Really terrific movie. So it's it was the kind of movie that I just, after I saw it, I had stars in my eyes. It was so beautiful and so moving.
All right, excellent. Nick, wow. What about yourself?
Yeah, well, Nick.
I think you mean Danny.
Danny,
Nick
whatever.
Just mentioned,
no, Nick,
I saw
give us another
an
one.
Italian
Fuck
cinema
Danny.
Class.
Fuck Danny. All right, start over again, Danny.
So I saw Little Odessa over at Lincoln Center, and the guy who introduced it said they were screening James Gray's personal print of the movie, so that was kind of cool. This was his first film. And it's sort of amazing. He made it at the age of like 24 or 25. And there's this interview he has online with Filmmaker Magazine. And like, he just says like, yeah, like, I don't know how this happened, but I was like directing Vanessa Redgrave at age 25. He's just like, yeah, it's like, it was like fucking ridiculous. Like, I don't know how that happened. And the other thing that's interesting about the movie to, like, think of it as something that was made by like a 25-year-old is just how like depressing it is. Because James Gray makes these like sort of family tragedy films, and they're not really depressing is probably not even like a proper word, because you feel like he explores his characters fully and like as much as he can, and like every time he just comes out thinking that they like deserve a tragic ending. So it's like sad, but you don't feel like he's forcing that sadness on the film. That's just like how he views it. So it's pretty powerful to see a film like this from a guy that young. And also the movie, which takes place in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn, was shot during like a really frigid winter, with like below zero temperatures and like a lot of snow. So the movie's like really gorgeous, where you just have like these streets in Brooklyn like covered in snow, and like frost is coming out of people's mouths when they're talking. So it's a really great movie to look at, and strong debut from a great director.
And you got Tim Roth doing his New York accent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And one thing that's almost like charming about the film is that like Tim Roth plays the hitman. And like the crime elements of the story are very much like a kid just coming out of film school, like what he thinks of as a crime movie. So like the first scene of the film, there's a guy in a phone booth, and Tim Roth just like goes up to him and shoots him. And then he calls someone and he's like, yeah, the job's done.
Yeah.
And it's like completely.
It definitely feels like the opening of a student film. Yeah.
So, but that's almost like, I guess if I saw it at the time, I would have been like, oh, that's kind of silly, but it's almost like charming to look back on it and think of that.
It also has, it shares a lot of locations with his best film, Two Lovers. In fact, I don't know if you noticed this, Danny, but the apartment that Edward Furlong's character lives in looks quite a bit like the one that in Two Lovers. So that was kind of neat. And a lot of the city photography very strongly recalls it. So, you know, little auteurist touches at the beginning.
Certainly.
Indeed. Now it's my turn. This week, I watched the Wes Anderson classic, Royal Tenenbaums.
What? Oh, that's with the actor Gene Hackman.
That is with the actor Gene Hackman. I've seen this before. I own it. I love it. It's a damn fine film. Do I need to say more? Is that good?
No.
Where does it rank?
Where does it rank? In Wes Anderson films?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Ooh, tough question. Number one, Life
what?
Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Oh. What?
Number Whoa. Two, probably The Royal Tenenbaums. Number
wow.
three, probably Moonrise Kingdom.
Okay.
And then the rest are somewhere else.
I think, yeah, after last year, I've come to think that Moonrise Kingdom is actually his most accomplished film. But I haven't seen The Royal Tenenbaums in... God.
I love
at least five and, at least 5.5 years.
Yeah, that so was kind of my thing. I feel like I bought it like a year or two ago and I hadn't seen it since then. That's
I mean, that's
one of those films I just wanted to go in for.
Yeah, like, a year's a lot shorter than like 5 years.
Yeah, but anyway. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people react that way when I say that my favorite is Life Aquatic. I don't know what it is. I really love that film. I think that Moonrise Kingdom is more cohesive and assured and maybe like a better film. But like,
personally, you're not cohesive or assured.
Exactly. So I'm pretty broken up. I'm drunk most of the time.
Yeah, you're not really
right
assured.
Now, but
as a director, you're kind of.
No, I'm terrible as a director.
Yeah.
So what I was saying. what was I going to say? Oh yeah, I mean, like, I think Moonrise Kingdom may be a better film, like, objectively, but subjectively, from my opinion, I favor. The Life Aquatic. I can say that. I can say that with certainty. That's it for today. Let's give you an idea of where we could be found between now and next week when we'll be talking about Gravity. Danny King, where can we find you?
TheFilmStage.com, TheKingBulletin.com, and Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
Nick Newman.
TheFilmStage.com and Twitter.com/
And I can be found at dearfilm.net, my personal blog, as well as thefilmstage.com and twitter.com/BrianJRowan. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us, and tune in next week.